The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Kiplinger.com, Money.com, and also from Kiplinger Personal Finance. Our first article from Kiplinger.com, 11 Money Habits Financial Experts Wish More People Would Cultivate. Even small changes can make a big difference to your financial journey. As with tackling any new goal, it helps to have the right habits in place to help lead you across the finish line. Whether you're saving up for a house, thinking about retirement, or just hoping to achieve a feeling of security, building the right habits is crucial to ensuring you have the tools you need to accomplish your goal. And while there are some habits you may be able to identify for yourself, there are others financial experts wish people would give more thoughtful consideration to. Here, 11 members of Kiplinger Advisor Collective discuss some of the most important money habits they think more people should cultivate and why they're so essential to building true wealth throughout your life. The first one up, think beyond your lifetime. Think beyond your lifetime in terms of multi-generational financial planning with strategic money decisions and financial investments. A healthy habit of wealthy individuals and their families is thinking about legacy benefits to pass down to their children, from real estate property to unique assets that are a lifelong gift, like a second citizenship. An investment should have various benefits. The next one, save for retirement as soon as you start working. The most important money habit I wish more people would cultivate is to start saving for retirement as soon as they start working and not wait until their 30s. Life expectancy is increasing, which means that the retirement period will be a lot longer for those starting to work today, and they will need to save more for their retirement. Next, learn to negotiate. Negotiating is a 1-2 punch that helps you earn more and save more. If you avoid asking for what you want because it's uncomfortable, you also leave a lot of money on the table over your lifetime. I advise starting small, like haggling with your cable company, then working up to the bigger stuff, like your salary. The more you do it, the easier it gets, and that's when the fun begins. And pass along your knowledge. I think an important money habit for people to cultivate is to pass along their knowledge to the next generation. It's crucial for young people to have the basic money management skills needed to flourish when they turn 18. It's not uncommon for young adults to go into debt due to the fact that basic money management skills weren't something they had to learn early on. And trust yourself and what's right for you. I wish people would cultivate self-trust around money decisions. There's so much noise from financial media and experts telling you what you should do, but most of these people don't know your life and just leave you feeling shame for your choices. Using a mindfulness practice to tune into your needs and follow your gut when it's time to make a spending or a financial decision. And put your savings goals first. This is a simple one. Pay yourself first. If you automatically save 10% to 20% of your income each month prior to it being in your account for spending, you will create savings and wealth over time. If you spend first and then try to save what is left at the end of the month, there will be nothing left. and diversify and multiply your income streams. I wish people would break the habit of being overly reliant on one income stream, which is often from one paycheck by a single employer. I would love more people to shift their mindset to one that supports diversifying and multiplying income streams. This means understanding the differences and importance of having both active and passive income streams. Get comfortable talking about money. The most important money habit I wish people would follow is to feel more comfortable talking about money. It is true that money means different things to different people. And for some people, the topic of money can cause heart palpitations. I recall my dad's philosophy from when I was a child. Just because we don't deal with a particular challenge or problem doesn't mean it will go away. And keep track of your expenses. I wish more people would keep better track of their expenses. This would allow them to know what they are spending and where. And it usually leads to a person making an effort to cut back on those expenses once they see what they're actually spending on said things. It can be an eye-opening shock. Set up consistent retirement contributions. One item I advise clients about that does not always get done is setting up a consistent contribution to their retirement plan. To do this through any retirement plan is fairly easy. This type of habit can be life-changing because of the compounding effect that can be realized through a consistent amount contributed over time. And lastly, avoid lifestyle inflation. People are tempted to spend on luxury items and lifestyle upgrades as their income increases. Avoiding lifestyle inflation by keeping expenses in check and maintaining a modest lifestyle ensures that the additional income is directed towards savings, investments, or paying off debt, leading to better long-term financial health. And that's certainly good advice for all of us. The next article, Money.com, cash is king, but is it okay to give as a present? July, August, and September are the most common birth months in the United States, meaning you probably have a birthday or know someone who has a birthday coming up soon. And try as you might to plan ahead, you've probably found yourself running around the house in the hours before a party searching for an item you can wrap and conceivably pass off as a gift. It would be so much easier if you could just Venmo them a few bucks or email over an Amazon gift card. But is that too impersonal? Does it come across as thoughtless? Not according to Diane Gottsman, national etiquette expert and founder of the Protocol School of Texas. Quote, cash is king, she says. Everyone loves money. People of all ages welcome monetary gifts, and sometimes they prefer it. In a 2019 survey from Mint, 61% of respondents said they'd prefer cash or a gift card to a quote-unquote traditional present. A 2023 YouGov poll found that cash or money in some form beat books, event tickets, clothes, and electronics in a ranking of the holiday gifts people would be most excited to receive. I think giving money as a present can be perfectly appropriate and even appreciated in most instances, etiquette expert Micah Meyer from Beaumont Etiquette writes in an email. It's a gift that truly allows the person you are gifting to choose what they really want or need. Meyer points out that in some cultures, it's actually standard to receive money for certain occasions. The New York Times reports that in Japan, for instance, the typical gushuji envelope of cash handed over in association with a celebration is up to 50,000 yen, or over $300. Speaking broadly, Cash can be preferred if the recipient is going through a transition and or taking on expenses associated with a new life stage. Think graduations, weddings, or baby showers. The money can help offset the debt they're taking on, and that's no small thing. Well, how to give the gift of cash or a gift card? There are some caveats here, Gottsman says. Whether a gift of money is perceived as impolite often depends on the relationship you have with the recipient. For instance, while your 15-year-old nephew might be stoked to get $50 cash, your more established great aunt might be offended. She might interpret the gesture as you suggesting she needs money. It could also go south if you're in a new romantic relationship where your partner is waiting for you to give them something meaningful. Think about the recipient's lifestyle and your relationship with them, Meyer says. Consider if they might prefer the flexibility of cash or if they would appreciate the thoughtfulness of a bespoke gift. If you're worried about something cold, Gottsman suggests you warm it up by getting a crisp bill from the bank and enclosing it in a nice handwritten card. That shows the recipient that you put time and effort into the present and didn't just pull a crumpled 20 out of your back pocket 10 minutes before the party. This goes for gift cards as well. Choose a place that you know, based on your shared history, the recipient loves. That way, you're personalizing the gift and enabling them to get a treat of their choice on your dime. Say your cousin loves going to their local AMC movie theater, but has trouble justifying the $15 popcorn combo given her strict budget. With an AMC gift card, you're letting her splurge without the guilt of overspending on something frivolous. That's going to make more of an impact than a random hand cream she'll never use. It is not a thoughtless gift if there's some thought put into it, Gottsman says. And our next article from Money.com, homes are finally selling below list price again. The typical home is selling for less than its list price, which hasn't been the case the last three summers. Homes sold for 0.3% less than the asking price over the four-week period ending June 23rd, according to a new report from Redfin. An increase in the supply of homes and sluggish sales are favoring buyers. The number of active listings has increased 16.9% in the past year to 955,300, while the number of pending home sales is down 4.3%. These market conditions are giving buyers the leverage to buy homes at reduced prices for the first time since early in the pandemic. The likelihood of home selling below asking price is rising because there's more supply than demand, at least for certain types of homes in certain parts of the country, Redfin said in the report. Overpricing may also play a role as sellers could be pushing the market as far as it can go. The median ask price of $414,975 is about $19,000 higher compared to last summer. And homes are selling below the list price again. This isn't the only time that homes have sold under list price in recent years, but it's the first time it's happened in June when the housing market is usually hot. For comparison, homes sold for about 2% above list price during this period in 2021 and 2022, according to Redfin. Last June, they sold for exactly the list price. Redfin calculates the difference using the average ratio of a particular home's sale prices to its list price. Only 32.3% of homes sold for more than the list price over the recent four-week period, which was the lowest amount since spring of 2020, when the housing market had nearly ground to a halt with the onset of the pandemic, according to the report. More home sellers have also been cutting their list price in recent weeks. The share of homes with price drop is up to 6.7%, which compares to 4.7% this time last year. Unfortunately for home buyers, however, affordability has yet to improve. Asking prices are up more than 6% year over year, and prospective home buyers are still dealing with high mortgage rates, currently just under 7%, according to Freddie Mac. The typical home is selling for a record high of $397,250, and the typical monthly mortgage payment is $2,785, which is only $50 less than the record high. Conditions may improve as the year goes on. Buyers may get a slight respite soon on cost, Redfin said in the report. The growing likelihood that homes sell below asking price, along with the high share of sellers dropping their prices, could mean sale price growth losses momentum. From Kiplinger Personal Finance, a realistic way to adjust your budget. If essential expenses take up a big chunk of income, this method offers flexibility. For nearly two decades, the 50-30-20 model has been a popular rule of thumb for budgeters. The method, which U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren outlined in the 2006 book, All You're Worth, The Ultimate Lifetime Money Plan, advises individuals to allocate 50% of their income towards necessities such as rent or mortgage payments, utility bills, gas, and groceries, 30% towards discretionary purchases such as restaurant meals and shopping, and 20% towards paying down debt and saving for the future, contributing to an emergency fund and retirement accounts, for example. But as households grapple with the lingering effects of high inflation, which reached historic highs in 2022, many people are finding that 50% of their earnings isn't enough to cover the necessities. In 2022, half of U.S. renters spent more than 30% of their income on rent and utilities, according to a recent report from Harvard University's Joint Center for Housing Studies. Although growth in rent prices has cooled following big increases in 2021 and 2022, rent levels are still considerably higher than they were before the pandemic, according to the report. Home buyers face their own challenges. Home prices remain elevated after surging during the pandemic, and mortgage rates have gone up too recently, hovering near an average of 7% for a 30-year loan. Introducing the 60-30-10 method. If you're devoting more than about one-third of your income to housing expenses, your overall spending on necessities may end up exceeding 50% of your income, especially because grocery prices have risen considerably too. That's why a budgeting framework known as 60-30-10 is gaining attention. With this method, you allocate 60% of your monthly income to essential expenses, providing extra space in your budget to accommodate housing and other necessities. Discretionary spending composes 30% of your budget, and the final 10% goes towards savings or debt repayment. The drawback of a 60-30-10 method is that it reduces the percentage of income dedicated to saving. For retirement alone, financial experts commonly recommend setting aside at least 15% of your pre-tax earnings, including any matching employer contributions, to your retirement accounts. But 60-30-10 could be a starting point for those who are struggling to keep their essential expenses to less than half their income. Younger individuals who have more time to save for long-term goals, as well as those residing in cities that have a high cost of living, may be particularly well suited to using this method, says Andrew Harris, managing director at online bank Genius Bank. The rule may appeal most to younger generations who can adjust their savings contributions as their income increases. And remember that budgeting models are merely guidelines. They're not set in stone. Harris recommends tailoring your budget to fit your priorities. For example, to give your savings a boost, you could trim the recommended 30% allocation to discretionary spending and dedicate more of your income to stashing away money for retirement and other goals. Ideas to cut down on non-essential spending include canceling any subscriptions and memberships that you don't use much, preparing more meals at home instead of dining at restaurants, and shopping for secondhand items instead of new ones. And our next article from Kiplinger Personal Finance. This is the timely article. Tax breaks on back to school shopping. Some states temporarily lift sales taxes on backpacks, laptops, clothing, and more. While kids may look forward to back-to-school shopping, it can create a cash crunch for parents, especially as inflation continues to be a concern. Deloitte, a consulting firm, estimates that families spent an average of $597 per child on back-to-school items in 2023, down 10% from 2022 as rising prices led families to cut back on non-essential spending. Fortunately, you may be able to lower your costs by taking advantage of state back-to-school sales tax holidays. Although states hold sales tax holidays all year long, exempting everything from generators to firearms, most occur in late summer and target commonly purchased school supplies. This year, 17 states are sponsoring back-to-school sales tax holidays in July and August. Depending on your state's sales tax rate and the items you purchase, the savings can be significant. Tennessee, for example, which has an average combined state and local sales tax rate of 9.55%, exempts computers worth up to $1,500 from sales tax during the July 26th through 28th weekend. The exemption applies to both state and local sales tax, which isn't the case in all states, and merchants that sell eligible items are required to comply. And here is an interesting article from Kiplinger Personal Finance about libraries. More than just books. Library freebies, from kitchen gadgets to job training? If you haven't visited your local library or its website lately, you might want to see what it offers. Besides lending books, public libraries around the country provide patrons with a range of free items and services, from passes for admission to museums and state parks to advice from tax experts, job training through LinkedIn, and financial data. For example, more than 800 public and academic libraries in the U.S. offer access to Morningstar's Investing Center, a database featuring Morningstar's ratings and analyst reports, portfolio tracking tools, online classes, and more, according to Morningstar spokeswoman Kate Holtkamp. Libraries also lend everything from garden and household tools to electronic devices, musical instruments, and movie projectors. Some libraries even loan out small kitchen appliances such as air fryers and pressure cookers. Hundreds of libraries offer free garden seeds, and you can search for one of those near you at the website seedlibraries.weebly.com. Through many libraries, you can stream TV shows, movies, and music with services such as Hoopla and Canopy. The Public Library Association, an organization that supports library professionals, has a program that enables rural libraries to lend patrons Wi-Fi hotspot devices to increase access to the Internet. And here's an interesting article as we wrap up our episode today. This article appeared in the AARP Bulletin. Solving the Password Conundrum. During the research for this cover story, one modern problem came up above all else. I can't remember all the passwords I need for websites. We have solutions, but first we want to acknowledge why this issue exists. In 2023, there were 3,205 reported data compromises in which hackers break into the data files of a company or organization and steal consumer information. That was a 74% increase over 2022. When hackers learn your password to a site, they can access other accounts if you use the same password on those. The best way to protect yourself is to have a different password for every site. Therein lies the problem. A typical U.S. adult has more than 100 passwords, according to the NordPass survey. Here are the tools that can help. Keep a notebook. The old-fashioned approach is sometimes the best. Writing all your passwords on paper, then putting the list in a safe spot, say folded and tucked into an innocent-looking book on your shelf, is the easiest way to keep track. Or you can use a password manager. This is a secure online tool that organizes your passwords so that you need to remember only one master password. They include Bitwarden, 1Password, Dashlane, and Norton Password Manager. Or you can use a passkey. This is a newer and faster way to access protected websites. Instead of typing in a password for a website, you log in by using your fingerprint or scan of your face or your device's PIN number. How this works depends on what your device will support and how to know if the websites you use offer passkeys. Typically, they will ask you to sign up. Otherwise, look at the security part of their site to see if the service is offered. And we are out of time again for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you again for joining us. And until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.